spiritual and practical sides.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Echoes. I'm Deborah Niedermeyer with the final part of a series taken from a talk given by anthropologist Dick Nelson. Nelson wrote two academic works, Hunters of the Northern Ice and Hunters of the Northern Forest, and a book of short stories called Shadow of the Hunter. Last spring, he discussed some of what he learned about the Koyukon Athabaskan view of nature, the spiritual and practical sides of traditional beliefs and lifeways.
Okay, some comments now on the nature of nature. I want to mention that again, that this worldview that I'm talking about is very much a part of modern Koyukon subsistence. Modern Koyukon subsistence is all bound up with religious practices, as it's done, by the adults. Whether or not the younger people will acquire this, I can't say. Anyway, for traditional Koyukon people, all that exists in nature is imbued with awareness and power. All events in nature are potentially manifestations of this power. All actions toward nature are mediated by consideration of its consciousness and its prepotency. And the interchange between humans and nature is based on an elaborate code of respect and morality. Nature is a second society in which people live, a watchful and possessive one whose bounty is wrested as much by placation as by cleverness and craft. Living with Koyukon people, I was struck very forcefully by the fact that they experience a different reality. This is belief, but it goes beyond the power of just faith. There's a different existence in the boreal forest, and it's fully actualized within their physical and emotional senses. It's a reality that we have not learned to see. And you might consider that the locus of human perception is in the mind, that the senses are only the things that bring impulses to our mind, and our mind creates the images. And so each of us can learn to see or not to see as our culture dictates. This is much more than just an interesting thing. It's of profound importance when we look at it in the broader context of humanity. Each human society sets forth its own regulations for dealing with the environment. And these regulations derive in large measure from the way that natural reality is perceived. Behavior toward the environment in each culture is therefore an ideology put into motion and made tangible. Different ideologies can have fundamentally different effects on the welfare of the environment. And so let's look at a comparison between Koyukon and Western concepts of nature to make this clear. Looking first at the Koyukon people, the following principles emerge. Koyukon worldview is based on the fundamental premise that a moral system governs human behavior toward nature. Human actions toward nature are predicated then on a moral code. Koyukon people do not and cannot strive to confront and conquer the world that is so directly their source of life. They have to, figuratively at least, move with the forces of their environment, and I guess literally too, not attempting to control or master or fundamentally alter it. Koyukon ideology requires that humans placate or coerce nature in spiritual ways in order to receive its bounty. And it's important to note that this ideology also includes something that I haven't gone into any detail, but is very, very important, includes a highly developed conservation ethic, includes sustained yield practices that are exactly the same as those in modern wildlife management, and includes a strict prohibition against waste of resources from nature, a very important part of this ideological system. For the Koyukon people, and many others who have similar ideologies, who live outside the Western sphere of cultures, we cannot speak, as the anthropologist Robert Redfield says, we cannot speak of man and nature, but rather of man in nature, because humanity, nature, and the supernatural are united within a single cosmos. They are not conceptually separated as they are in Western cultures. And so the destinies of humanity and nature are intertwined in a system that's bound together by principles of moral and ethical conduct. But in the vast and rapidly expanding sphere of Western cultures, there is an entirely different conception of nature and morality. Morality and spirituality in these cultures is fundamentally a human thing. Natural entities have no place in the supernatural realm. Our deities are human. Our spiritual things are human. Both humanity and God are separated in this conceptual system from nature. They're aloof from it, and they're above it. I'll spare you the old quote from Genesis. A fundamental human goal is to confront the natural world, to subdue it, and to master it in this Western worldview. Spiritually inert nature is provided to serve human needs and is removed entirely from the code of moral strictures or moral imperatives in this basic worldview. Utilitarianism has replaced supernaturalism. It's a one-dimensional world in which practicality prevails, and empiricism is the source of ultimate truth and understanding of the natural world. Omnipotent humanity is given essentially complete dominion over nature without moral obligation or restraint. Humanity no longer belongs to nature. Nature belongs to humanity. I'm not so naive that I don't recognize that there's an undercurrent or an underground that goes against this philosophy nowadays. But I think if you look at the basic Western worldview, this runs fundamentally through it. Think about the teachings of Koyukon ideology then. There is no need for a discussion of the consequences of the Western ideology in an environmental sense. It will say, you know, I think it suffices to say that we live in an age of widespread concern for the very survival of humanity. Western ideology, which sets humanity apart from nature, appears to be failing us rather severely. An anonymous writer said this: "Modern man does not experience himself as a part of nature, but as an outside force destined to dominate and conquer it. He even talks of a battle with nature, forgetting that if he won the battle, he would find himself on the losing side." Koyukon people rarely talk about the differences in worldview between themselves and the outside, although I have heard of one ideological conflict described to me by my Koyukon teachers that I think really says it all. There was an ice jam at breakup on the Yukon River, and the Air Force sent planes out to bomb the ice jam, right? Koyukon people, the people who told me this story, said, You know, we pray to ice jams. They bombed it. And this is an old person. This wasn't some young Turk radical telling me this. And he said, ever since then, those poor people around there get flooded out all the time by the ice jams in the spring. I have seen Koyukon people praying to the ice at breakup. And it's, to me, it sort of encapsulates the whole difference in these two approaches to nature. One elder person told me, quote him, the country knows. If you do wrong to it, the whole country knows. It feels what's happening to it. I guess, he said, everything is connected together somehow underneath the ground. The significance of the Koyukon ideology is evident in the health and the vigor and the essentially pristine condition of the environment in which they live and in which their ancestors have lived for somewhere between 10 and 20,000 years. Their code of environmental ethics has continued into this era of fairly radical cultural change, and it's still, these kinds of restraints still govern their use of modern technology, of snow machines and rifles and chainsaws and all the rest. And their impact, the impact of Koyukon people on their environment, continues to be essentially an impact of mind. And what I'm talking about here is the fact that the Koyukon environment is imbued and filled up with a rich repast of cultural things, of knowledge, of spiritual associations, of personal associations, of meanings that the land has inherited through this culture that can never be known except through its traditions. These invisible associations with the land and its places are almost all that is associated sort of physically with the land, because the way it's been touched has been sufficiently gentle that you really can't see it. As I've said many times, when and where has our culture ever treated an environment that well? Why is it that the natural landscapes of Alaska are worthy of being the greatest national monuments in the United States? It's because for 10 or 20,000 years, these lands have been so well taken care of. And I think that this ideology may have something to do with it. And so what I would say is that the Koyukon people and those like them leave for us and for future generations of humanity a legacy of land, a monument of a natural landscape that's far more significant as a human achievement than pyramids and ancient ruins and cathedrals and all the rest of the things that human beings have constructed. It's what the Koyukon people have left intact that represents to me, I think, the greatest of human achievements. Ever since Euro-Americans entered North America, they have seen it as their duty to change and educate the native people. But at the same time, Western technology has progressively deteriorated the land, the waters, and the atmosphere of this continent, has made this continent less and less healthy, has cut away from the chances for a human future on this land. And so I wonder if it might now be a good time for us to change the roles and to become students of Native American people like the Koyukon rather than being their teachers. The irony is that it may soon be too late unless we start now. The wisdom of the Koyukon people and the Koyukon view of nature may be forever lost. Perhaps we have been too long looking at the world without considering that it might be looking back. Thank you.
Anthropologist and author Dick Nelson, in his conclusion of a talk called Eyes of the Forest, A Koyukon Athabascan View of the Natural World. I'm Deborah Niedermeyer, and you've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.